This episode of the Antlers and Hicks podcast is brought to you by Bloodline Custom Calls. I've been a fan of Bloodline Custom Calls for several years now. I've gotten in touch and gotten a good friendship with Jason Cooper and the boys over at Bloodline, and they make some of the best turkey calls I've heard. They also have some outstanding merchandise, so go check them out. BloodlineCustomCalls.com, Facebook, and Instagram. Check out Bloodline Custom Calls. I'm telling you, you won't be disappointed. All right, so before we get started with the podcast, a couple things I want to remind you guys of. Coming up September the 15th, the North Monroe Baptist Church in Monroe is going to have their sportsman's banquet. This banquet, they're going to be raising money for outside missions. The tickets for the banquet are going to be $50 each. They're raffling off a trip overseas to Africa. Got a lot of cool stuff they're going to be auctioning off. Man, this is going to be a great time. They're going to have some great speakers. I'm going to be there scoring. The reason I'm going to be there, mainly because I'm going to go anyway, and wherever I'm going to go where there's an outdoor theme, I'm going to have my scoring gear. So I told the guys, I'm like, hey, man, just say I'm going to be there, and if somebody happens to have a deer that they want scored, I'll be glad to score for Buckmasters. Now, Buckmasters, what we'll do, we don't give deductions. I'm for your official score. I'm going to give it your gross score, your total inches of antler, minus the inside spread. Now, it takes a hoss. I'm not going to lie to you. It takes a hoss for a rifle kill to make the record book, but for an archery kill, if you got like 125-inch deer minus a 15-inch inside spread, now you're at 110 inches. You're big enough at 110 inches for an archery kill to get in a Buckmaster Whitetail Trophy record. So look, or if you just got a deer you want me to score, hey man, bring it. I love scoring deer. I love talking deer hunting. Let's get that done. That's September the 15th, North Monroe Baptist Church. Again, doors open at 5:30. Dinner is at 6:30, and individual tickets are $50. Now, also, before we get started, guys, go to my Facebook page. Look at my merchandise. I've got a few hats out there. Got some shirts I've got put up. Shirts are $20, $25 if you want them shipped. Hats are $25, $30 if you want them shipped. Just Venmo me or PayPal me. You'll see my information. Hey, I ain't out here trying to get rich. I got a couple shirts. If you want to rep the brand, come on, let's do it. Guys, I got a good one for you today. This guy's Adam Sanderson. I don't know if you know him. He's a local guy. You should know. If you don't know who I'm talking about, you hadn't been paying attention to social media. Dude, thank you for coming on.
I appreciate you having me, sir. I do. Well, I really do.
Tell us about you, and then tell us about Redline Outdoors.
So I'm 38 years old, and I was born and raised here in West Monroe, Louisiana. Married my wife in... put me on the spot 15 years ago, October the 6th. Okay. We've got two kids. We got a boy and a girl. Our son's 11 and our daughter is 6. And Redline Outdoors, I started that back in June of 2020. And that was the first video I posted was around that time on my YouTube channel. And it's been going on for 2 years, you know, creating content in the outdoors, mostly deer hunting. I do have some fishing and some other stuff on there, a lot of bow hunting on there. And it's just something I'm real passionate about. And, you know, I love to share, you know, my outdoor experiences with everybody else. So that's kind of the gist of Redline Outdoors.
So why you call it Redline?
Well, for those of you that don't know, I'm a fireman, so the American flag that represents a fireman has a red line through the middle of it. So that's kind of where that derived from. And the red line could mean different things for different people. You know, it could be a blood trail. It could be your heart rate, you know, racing. But for me, it's the red line that goes through the American flag for the fire department flag.
Well, that's awesome, man. Man, that's good stuff. Now, being a fireman like that, does that help you during the fall as far as hunting goes?
You know, it's the perfect job. We work 24 on, 48 off. So whenever I get off at 7 a.m., I can hunt that evening, and I have all day the next day to hunt. And, you know, most firemen have side jobs, and I do have a lawn care business, and I do a little bit of taxidermy work. So the lawn care business works out well too, because you only got about 8 months of growing season around here. So October, November, December, you know, it's wide open on my days off up here. So absolutely, I take full advantage of it.
I bet you do. I've noticed, man, you know, I was riding over here today and I'm thinking, man, you know, if there's people who, when you meet them, you know, they like to hunt and this, that, and other, you don't really know their style of hunting, but through watching your YouTube channels, man, there are hunters and then there's outdoorsmen.
Right.
And there's people who understand what happens in the outdoors and why they happen. And I can tell you, brother, you know, I don't know how, I feel like you're an outdoorsman.
I appreciate it.
You know, just like the persimmon video you did the other day. I mean,
yeah.
A lot of people, you know, they don't even realize and think about early season. All they're thinking about is corn and rice bran. And man, I'm going to tell you something. You can find a fruit tree.
It's on.
It is on.
And I'm a little bit worried about those persimmon trees I found, because I was mowing a yard, actually, and they have a lot of persimmon trees in their yard, and they're already starting to fall.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've always had trouble with persimmons, is catching them right
exactly
in the woods. And I'll tell you what I used to do. This ain't no joke. You know what this old country dude used to do?
What's that?
My granddaddy had a persimmon tree in his yard, in his dog pen. And I would go out there and I would rake up the persimmons and put them in a plastic bag, and I'd take them with me to the stand and I'd throw it out. You talking about, that was better than a feeder going off.
Oh, yeah.
Because when them persimmons hit the ground, they could smell them. And within about 20 minutes, you're going to have something come in.
Yeah. My grandma used to have pears in her yard, and I used to do the same thing. And that we would bring 5 gallon buckets out there.
Yeah.
And those deer would hammer them.
Thank
goodness there wasn't any hogs around.
So. Back in those days, because we would have drawed every hog in the country.
Absolutely.
Man. So when you're doing when you do red light, you're self videoing, right?
Right. Yep. I can't think of a time that I've ever had. Craig Robertson did film me one time, actually when I was recurve hunting. But other than that, it's always been self-film hunting. And it's fun, but I'm telling you, it's a lot of work, and it's pretty challenging.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried it, and I've always said the camera has a curse. You take a camera,
right?
You ain't going to see nothing.
Yeah.
So tell us, how does it, I mean, it handicaps
it
you.
It does, because, like, not, I wouldn't say my sole reason to be out there is to get everything on footage, but it is.
Yeah.
You know, that's my passion. So it absolutely does handicap you. I always tell people that you have to put the camera first, and then you think about the weapon.
Yeah.
Last year I got a video on YouTube. I was after a big deer in Missouri, and I really think that camera cost me that big deer, because I shot the wrong deer. The giant was right behind him, and I actually saw the giant coming through there. And when I saw his rack, I knew that was him, and I said, I'm done looking at his rack. I'm finished. And a couple of other bucks came, and they went on to the soybean field. And I said, all right, the big one's the last one, so he's going to come through. And you know how you do. You get worked up. So
absolutely.
You got to stop looking at his rack. Once you decide to shoot a deer, stop.
Yeah.
And I did, and I saw him coming through the bushes, and a smaller deer traded places with him.
Mm.
And I didn't even know that deer existed. I didn't know he was there. And after watching the footage, I shot the deer that I thought was the deer I was after, and you could see him about 10 feet right behind him. But I had a just one shot to get that deer down, and I think if I wasn't so focused and worried about that camera, because I was worried about what trail he was going to take and, you know, what he was going to do, if he's going to get, you know, see me, and all these things just go into your head. You know, if he gets past me and gets in the bean field, it's over with, you know. So it does hinder you a little bit, but, man, when it comes together and you get that shot on camera, it ain't nothing like it.
I tell you, you know, I've watched a lot of your footage. You do a good job. What do you use for camera?
Sony 8. Man, I done forgot what it was. That's how non-technical I am. I had to go get back with you on that, to be honest.
Okay. Well, I tell you, man, your YouTube channel is impressive.
I appreciate it.
You're, I mean, it's not like he's some Joe Blow out there throwing some stuff on YouTube. You've actually, I guess if you could say YouTube made it, you know. You're doing what everybody wants to do when they get on YouTube.
Right.
You make a little money on YouTube.
I started making a little money, and it eases the burden some, you know. And the subscriber count right now is it's going up pretty good. So I try not to look at it, because whenever you do an edit, sometimes, you know, you don't get the people, you don't get the views sometimes you think you should get, or sometimes you have one blow up. But I try not to look at it and dwell on that too much, because sometimes it'll get you down, because you really go out there and work hard on getting some footage and putting in the editing and the time and, you know, and all that. But if it's something that you're doing now or something that you want to do, just keep on keeping on. Don't stop. You know, I've always said from the beginning, the only way I'm going to fail is if I quit.
Yeah, and that's true. You do it. And I've noticed that. You don't do it for likes. Obviously, you don't do it for views. You do it because you love it.
I do.
That's what I try to do with all of my stuff. I'm not worried about likes and views and shares and this, that, and other. The way I look at it, if one person can take something away from anything I say or anything I post, it was a victory. It's fine. It's great. Otherwise, you know, I'm just doing it because I like to do it,
yep.
You know?
Yeah.
And some people, man, they can get a little fired up, and you know, some of the comments you get ain't the ones you're really looking for,
brother. There is some people out there. I don't care if I killed a deer with a toothpick. Somebody's gonna have something stupid to say every now and then. So
yeah.
You can't let those negative comments get you down.
You can't. I mean, I've had them. You've had them. There's a lot of people that I know that will say, man, I want to post this video, but man, I don't know, man, I think it's stupid. Man, the only stupid video is one that's don't put up there.
Yep.
You know, if you like it and you want to share it, throw it out there. Yeah. I've had some people, ugly, redheaded, bushy bearded, thinking I'm Mr. Outdoorsman. And I'm like,
man.
And you know, stuff like that to get to you, but you got to understand, you know, those people, when they see something that you're doing, and they don't like it because they aren't doing something similar.
Right.
So you, yeah. I'm telling you, folks, go check his YouTube out. The guy is you're a killer, man.
I appreciate that.
I mean, you really, but you don't just hunt out of state. You hunt in state. You hunt private land. You hunt public land. I mean, if you put him in a Dollar General parking lot, he may kill something.
Well, hopefully I can keep that going this year. So I'm leaving, Lord willing, I'm leaving Friday for Kentucky. So we got some decent weather coming up there, and hopefully I'll get another velvet on the ground.
Yeah, that's a velvet hunt over in Kentucky. I went to Kentucky last year about this time of the year. And, of course, I was sitting there eating breakfast, and it hit me. I was like, man, Kentucky's an early season state.
Yeah.
And so I got to look, and I'm like, oh, my goodness gracious. This, like, deer season's like next weekend.
Yeah.
That's it. Is it hot out there?
It's kind of similar to what it is here. The humidity's not quite so bad. I'm right there in Western Kentucky, so it's about a 7-hour drive. But I tell you, one good thing about Kentucky up until last September was, especially for early season, you know, you can pattern those deer on bait. But they found a CWD deer in Tennessee. And that county butted up to the county that I hunt in. So there's three counties right there that in Kentucky that you can't bait anymore. So we're having to strictly hunt over soybean plots and cornfields and trails, and there's no bait, no minerals either.
You been doing any, like, trail cameras or anything like that out there?
It's actually it's called Clark's River Whitetails, and 3 years ago I told myself, you know, I want to kill a velvet, and I don't have access anywhere to go velvet hunting, and I wasn't going to go get my own Kentucky lease or whatnot. So one thing led to another, and I found this guy. His name's Wes Steele at Clark's River Whitetails, and we kind of became friends. And I went there last year, so I'm gonna go there again this year. But he's got several cell cameras out and some nice shooters out there this year. So
I hope you get one.
I actually went up there in February. And like I said, I was actually the first person to kill a deer on Clark's River Whitetails. And I tell you, before I booked with him, because a lot of outfitters get a bad rap because they're shady. It's just the way it is. But I talked to this guy several times on the phone, and for, you know, 30 minutes at a time, you know, because I'm worried, you know, if I send him some money, and, you know, I may not ever see it again.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we kind of struck a friendship. And I actually went up there in February and did some scouting and hung some stands. We did 3 days worth of work, you know, daylight till dark. So anyway, that's kind of the gist of that. So,
well, I tell you, man, that sounds like it's a good deal. You, what kind of bow you shoot?
I'm shooting a Matthews Tri-X this year. Last, I don't know, 4 or 5 seasons, I was shooting a Halon, and I found a Tri-X. You know, I wanted that new Matthews, was a V3X, mm-hmm. but, I found a Tri-X that was barely used, and it was totally rigged out with exactly everything I wanted on it. So, I mean, it's probably been on 2 hunts, maybe.
But. I got a VXR, bought it in 2020, and I'm going to tell you, I had an old, the first Monster that they ever came out with, and I went into Spotted Dog, and Richard had that VXR sitting up there, and I thought it was a toy. Because the cams were so big. I'm like, what in the world? He said, no, cuz, shoot it. And I'm like, man, I don't want to shoot it. And I had shot bows through the years. And nothing ever just really wowed me, you know, enough to spend that kind of money.
Right.
And much better than the Monster I was already shooting. And so I said, okay. So he was tuning up, you know, getting some stuff ready on the Monster. And I shot that VXR, and Adam, it was about, that thing stayed on my mind every day for about 2 or 3 weeks.
You should have never shot it.
I shouldn't have.
Yeah, that's where you messed up.
I did. And that's when I, you know, I wanted to push my limits with my distance and stuff like that. So I was like, well, look, if I'm going to buy it, I'm going to buy all the, all that, man. I got that dial sight that'll go out there to 100 yards and all that stuff. And, you know, it's been fun now that I've got the bow and, buyer's remorse never did set in.
Yeah, once it's gone.
Yeah, I was happy. And I'm going to tell you, man, that VXR, the V3, all that is just,
whew. Yeah. What sight are you shooting?
I'm shooting that Spot Hog.
Spot Hog?
Yeah, okay. The Fast Eddie XL.
It's always been between that one and the HHA, you know, the single pin. I started shooting that one several years ago, and it's, man, you range it, you put it on there and shoot it. And that's, I mean,
the hardest part to me about the dial is you get that 20 yard and then you get the 60 and then you got to find the, you know, the tape. Hey, I'm going to tell you, I will shoot 2 or 3 weeks at 60 just to make sure I put, because I don't want to put the wrong tape on.
And you got to buy all those tapes again.
I've had to buy three sets, man. I have had to buy 3 sets because I would change the grain of my broadhead, and then you're like, crap, I got to buy. And then I changed my draw length this past time, and I'm like, gosh, I got to buy a new set. And it's just, you know, I don't want to make changes, but at the same time, those changes I felt were necessary.
Yeah, because you want it to be on.
You do.
So let me ask you this. Right. So whenever you're sitting there hunting, a lot of people ask me, where do you keep your tape at? You keep it on 20, 30, 40? What do you do?
I keep mine where my, if I'm hunting where I think they're going to come out, 20, 30, whatever that is.
That's where you
put it. I've got another one underneath it that is ten yards farther.
Okay.
So if he boogers or whatever, I can, you know, go out. But I'm going to tell you, that is a concern of mine that I haven't had to deal with yet, but I know it's coming. You know, time in the woods, you're going to expose, you know, weaknesses.
Yeah.
That one is quartering away from me.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And I've got to make an adjustment on the fly.
So I keep mine, like if I'm hunting, say in the rut or whatever, I keep it on 25.
Yeah.
That way, if he's 30, I aim just a little high. If he's 20, I aim just a little low in case you have to make a quick shot where you can't range him. You don't have time to do nothing. So I just keep it on 25 whenever it's a situation like that.
Well, I did. I take that back. I did have one instance. The year I bought the bow, I had a doe come in. I was in Dad's ground blind, and I ranged her at 30 yards. And, I mean, when I clicked and it said 30, I said, oh, you dead, baby. And I rolled that sight, and she was coming across. Well, one thing is Dad does not like to feed rice bran. And I love it. So I went in there and put a little thing of rice bran out. And that doe did not like that rice bran. The difference, it hadn't been there. She came and she was convinced there was a booger in that rice bran.
She didn't like it.
Not a bit. And, man, she was staring it down and eyeballing it. And I said, you just keep your attention on that. So she's already, number one, geeked up for something to happen.
She's already nervous.
Yes. And then the next thing, I didn't even know until after I made the shot. And my buddy in South Louisiana, he and I were texting that afternoon. And I told him, I said, man, I think I just missed a deer. And what happened was when she was coming in. She at 30, she was quartering to me. So when she got where she was supposed to, she was probably 26 or 27.
Yep.
And when I shot, it was like the Matrix. I mean, she laid down. And I've got it on, had it on video. And I mean, she just laid over and ducked it. And it went, I mean, it couldn't have missed her by a quarter of an inch. Right over top, and then it bedded up in a pine tree. And I texted Jordy, and I was like, man, I think I just missed this deer. I don't know how. And this is what he said. He said, where was her head? So I played that video back. Her head was down. And Jordy said he had read an article just previously that it said that if a deer's got their head down, they're more likely to jump the stream because their body weight is already headed in that yep. direction.
Okay, that makes sense.
So now I'm going to try to start making sure that, you know, if their head isn't up, I'm going to give a quick little whistle or something, get that head up, and make that shot.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
I don't want that, you know, that extra little. I'm telling you, it couldn't have been a quarter of an inch. It just barely grazed over top of them.
And that's a real issue is deer ducking arrows.
Yeah. I was watching Michael Waddell the other day. And, you know, you've got the targets, and they've got the rings where you're supposed to hit, and you want to hit right dead in the center and this, that, and other. And he said, actually, he said, what you want to do is go up that front leg, he said, and right in the armpit is where you want to be aiming.
The lower
thirds.
Because
it's going, exactly, because that deer's going to drop.
He's big on the lower thirds, and that mm-hmm. makes sense. I mean, if he does not drop at all, well, you got him in the heart.
That's
and
right.
And if he drops, you got to double on.
Yeah, right. And if you aim center and hit that top third, now you're gonna, it's gonna take forever to start a blood trail.
Yeah,
because it's, you know, the body cavity's got to fill up, and the blood trail ain't gonna be near as good as it would be if it was a low shot,
if you even hit him. If he doesn't even duck the whole arrow.
That's right,
you
that's
know?
Right. So what kind of broadhead you shoot?
I'm gonna shoot a Slick Trick Magnum 100 grain this year. It's a four blade. I've been shooting it here, you know, and it's been doing pretty dang good. So I think I killed some deer with it last year and a lot of hogs in the past, so I've already got confidence in the broadhead, and it's super accurate, you know, especially for a fixed blade. So that's what I'm gonna shoot this year.
Yeah, you like those fixed blades?
I've had some tuning issues in the past with them, and that was always everybody's, you know, concern. Is that's why we all use mechanicals, you know, and to get that extra cut. But I'm going to take the mechanical part out of it this year. And, you know, that's a deep conversation.
Oh, man,
you know,
we could take a whole hour on that.
There's people probably saying stuff right now, but, you know, it's on what you have confidence in.
That's it.
So
that's it. I tell you what I don't have confidence in. I did that single bevel fixed head last year. Oh, I drank that Kool-Aid, cuz.
Did you?
And, man, I had a doe come in. It was the second day. And I mean, I put it right where I needed to. I said, dead deer. I got down, and it was, number one, it'd been a little wet. I think it rained the night before. And number two, it was pine straw. And it's kind of hard to see blood sometimes on pine straw.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I had to do a grid search. I called Gary Cobb to come to get the dog on the deer, but I couldn't get him. And so when I couldn't get him, I started doing a grid search and actually found her. Then I shot another deer, lost that deer totally. And I shot a hog with the third one. And I was like, after the first deer, I started shooting. I went back to Rage.
Yeah.
But the hog and the, no, I tell you, after the second deer, I went back and started shooting the Rage. Mm-hmm. But after the hog, I saved that third one for a hog. Never, ever found that hog. And I went back the next day just to recover my arrow and my broadhead. Still hadn't found that hog.
Did you find the arrow and broadhead?
No, I didn't find none of it.
Oh, it's still in him.
It is somewhere. That pig still may be alive with that dude in there.
Dang.
But my buddy shot the same one, and he shot about 150 deer out of state and lost it. And he, same thing. He said, I hit that deer right where I was supposed
150
to.
150 inch?
Yes.
Okay.
And he said, I lost it. They looked and looked, and he said, I'm telling you, that deer's dead. But it was in CRP, and yeah, he couldn't find it. They couldn't have no blood. They did all the searching they could do. They never found the deer.
Yeah. That's, you know, those broadheads, there's a trade-off for everything that you want to, you know, every broadhead on the market. So.
But it's a two-blade, and it's a small cut. Where you have that four-blade,
yeah,
you're going to do some damage when you go through that animal.
Yeah. So if you look at it, it's a four-blade. It has 2.4 inches of total cut. It's not doing the big wide cut that you're raised with. It's 2.3 inches, right?
Mm-hmm.
So overall, it's still 2.4 inches, you know, of cut.
Yeah.
So
That sounds like you tried and true on that. I think I'm gonna shoot a Ramcat this year. My cousin she married a guy. Now, when she brought this, started bringing this old boy around the house, you know, I was a young man. I thought I was, I'm a hunter. Nah, yeah. When she started bringing Chris Mike around the house, and I realized quick, I wasn't near to the level of this guy. This guy's killed everything but a person. I mean,
are you sure?
Hey, I'm telling you, man, if he goes in the woods, he's coming out with something. They go out of state, public land, he's coming out with something.
Dang.
He can get on. He run. You and him, y'all would jihaw. I'm telling you, you'd get along with him. But he has been tried and true on them Ramcat. And when I started having my broadhead issues last year, he kept sending me pictures. Every kill he got with him, one of them Ramcats. Look at that. Look at that. Look. I'm like, okay. All right.
I've heard some good things about him.
You have made your point, Chris.
So that's enough, huh?
Yeah, that's all I need, you know.
Yeah. I'm over here sitting in a deer stand. I ain't seeing nothing. And he's over here killing.
Oh, slaying, man.
130s and 140s and stuff.
One of them, hey, he shot one last year, and it looked like you throwed red jam all over it. I said, my word, you shoot that with a 6.5? He said, nah, that's a Ramcat.
He said.
So, man. So that's where I'm going to head this year.
Try it out and see.
Yeah, I'll let you know.
I've heard some good things about them. So,
after Kentucky, where are you going?
I'll hunt here at the house in Louisiana, rather, the 1st of October. Then I've got a vacation here from the fire department. I plan on going to Missouri. Mm-hmm. And if I kill there, we'll see what happens after that.
Yeah.
I stayed on the road pretty hard last year, and you know, there's a trade-off, you know.
Yeah,
you're missing time.
That's right.
With your people. But you know, there's some decent deer around here, you know, that I could go after. But you know, I don't really have the chance of a booner in this area. Not as much as you would in the Midwest. I'm not saying they don't exist here, because they do. But you just got a better whole lot better chances up there.
So. Oh yeah, man! You get up there, you get number one. You get to see more deer,
act
total.
Like deer.
Yes, and you get to see them doing what they're supposed, what act like deer are gonna act like.
Yeah.
You know, around here, we don't get that opportunity. Number one, it's so darn thick, and number two, they just it's insane at sometimes at how smart these animals can be.
Yep. Even these so-called pet deer that people, you know, think they are in these neighborhoods and stuff, but if you go to hunting those deer, they get pretty wise too. So,
oh hey, they're not pet deer. There was a guy in Ruston several years ago, killed a 180-inch deer. Jason mm-hmm. Cooper killed a deer, grossed 180 yep. something inches inside the Ruston city limits. Killed it with a bow. You know, it's 100% legal.
Right.
Hunting. Yep. And man, you know what he told me? I was scoring a deer, and he said, you know, because there was a lot of flack behind it.
Oh, deer. So you saw the deer in person?
Yeah, I got scored. I was one of the officially scored for Buckmasters.
Okay.
And we were talking, he and I, we're now really good friends. He does a lot with Bloodline Custom Calls. And he said, man, people tell me that this deer was in their backyard acting tame. He said, trust me, when I saw that deer, he said, that was probably the smartest deer in the woods I'd ever seen. He said, this deer knew something was up. He said, I almost didn't get the shot.
I heard rumors about that. You know, they had that deer eating out of their hands. You know.
Hard horn. You ain't going to have a 180-inch deer, hard horn, 80-inch deer eating out of your hand. No, sir.
Not around here.
No.
Not around here. Kudos to him, brother. I'm jealous. I wish I could have got him.
Yeah, that's a beautiful heavy horn deer. And, you know, when deer get in the woods, man, I don't care if people say they're pet, this, I know. You're in their yard. They know what's up. They know something's going on. And you really got to play your game to outsmart them.
Even more so.
Yeah.
Even more so. As soon as you penetrate those woods as a hunter, it's like they know.
They know something is different. I mean, think about it, man. If somebody came in your living room and was sitting in your couch, wouldn't you say, hey, man, something's up?
They'd know. And when they come in their yard, they know the situation, what's going on in your yard. They know your kids are playing. They know, you know, what goes on in your yard. And you pull up at 5 o'clock. They know our routines better than we know our own.
And, you know, I've noticed that I've had some deer come up in the yard. And as long as I stay on my back patio, they're cool.
Yeah.
Soon as I take a few steps off that patio,
they're gone.
Because you know why? Because I don't ever do that.
Right.
You know, they always look and they may see me, but I don't ever get off the patio. But as soon as I take a few steps, they gone.
They pay attention.
They are very... I did an article on a guy from South Louisiana, Mark Huval, a couple of years ago. Probably been about 10 years ago, actually. And Mark killed a huge deer with a traditional bow. And he was, I want to say he was in a ground blind. And so I was, he and I were just talking, and I said, do y'all do any unorthodox style deer management? And the first thing he told me, he said, yeah, we shoot the smart does.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what do you mean the smart does? You giving them a test or something like that? He said, no, man. He said, the does that come through, and when they come through, they're looking up in the trees. That's the one to take out.
Trying to blow at you, trying to see you.
Yeah.
That'll ruin your hunts.
Yeah, he said, because they're educating the
everybody
other
else.
Well, and the thing, that deer I shot last year, the first one I almost lost that I had a grid search for, there was another deer with that one, a smaller deer. And every time that little deer came in, she spotted me. And I had to change my whole setup just so that she wouldn't blow me out.
Because her buddy told her where
she was. Well, she saw the shot.
Okay.
She saw the shot. So now every time she's coming in, she's looking up in the trees. Yep. And that's the same thing. She got educated. And with that big doe, if they're looking up in those trees, they're just educating the little ones, man.
Mm-hmm. It's a generation thing.
It is. Well, and it's just like everything else. I mean, it's survival.
Yeah.
You know, the bigger does, you know, the wildlife and fisheries. My uncle was a biologist with the wildlife and fisheries for years. And he said, that's their job. The big doe's job is to train those babies on how to survive. So the... like over in the river delta, when it starts to flood over in the Mississippi River, he said those big does know where to go, and they show the smaller deer where to go. And so then it's a generational thing. He said that's how come they've got a late breeding season.
Right.
It's for the flooding, mm-hmm. because the younger deer that were dropping fawns too early, well, those deer didn't make it in the flood. Right. Those little ones didn't make the flood water.
Right.
They would drown. Well, now these deer, they're holding their little ones a little bit longer. And then when, if a flood comes up, then they can make it. But usually all the flood waters are already gone by that point.
Right.
So, you know, the deer, that's what they're bred to do. They are here to do their, to survive.
Yep. They're survivors for sure.
Yeah, man. I'm telling you, it's crazy how well they can survive. Mm-hmm. So when you hunt public land, I don't want to know where you hunt. Just tell me some of your favorite things you're looking for when you're hunting in public land.
You know, I thought about that the other day when I was out scouting. And if I was going to a new piece of public, I would start out probably at a creek. If I knew nothing about it, anywhere, it don't matter where you are. If you go to a creek and you walk that creek, you're eventually going to find a rub line, you know, a creek crossing, a spot that's holding water that deer are using as a drinking water hole, something, or a thicket that meets up with that creek. It's just a good starting point, you know. That's always where I start is creeks.
So okay. That's interesting because, I mean, you're right. I mean, you can walk a creek long enough, you're going to find where they're crossing.
Yeah. Or more in the Midwest, if you're hunting hill country, ravines, you know, there's only – certain places that deer want to cross those ravines, and if you find that, you know, you could be in the tickets right there.
And I'll tell you what I like to look for when I'm hunting a piece of land that, you know, where I may not be baiting or maybe want to travel, be on a travel corridor. I've noticed that deer like people. They're going to use those ravines,
route.
The easiest route.
Yeah.
And you got to look at it like this. You're going to climb that steep hill, or you're going to go to that ravine where it slowly creeps up.
Yeah. They're honestly, let's be honest. They're lazy just like we are.
Oh, yeah.
They want to make it easy
for
themselves. So. Yeah. But another thing I like to look for is swamps and waterways. You know, a lot of things people overlook on public land around here anywhere is waterways. You can use those as pinch points. Whether it's a fallen tree on the edge of a swamp and they have to go through there, or a field and a swamp, or any waterway, honestly, you can use those as pinch points, funnels, whatever you want to call them. Beaver dams, deer love to cross beaver dams. Things like that, but waterways are another thing that people often overlook around here. So, I mean, it's easy in the Midwest to see a pinch point, you know, because it's fields and a creek draw. So, you know, around here, I like to use waterways.
Okay. Now, just real quick, you like to turkey hunt too, don't you?
Yes, sir. I do. I do like to turkey hunt, and I'm still new at it. I guess this coming season will be my third or fourth year. Now, the first year that I killed that big-time turkey down there in Union Parish, I had an April vacation from the fire station, and I had nothing going on. And I said, I'm going to kill a turkey. And I kept track on my phone how many miles I walked before I killed that turkey. And it was almost 100 miles.
Wow.
Okay. And that was my problem, is I was running, gunning way too much. And the next year, I believe I killed, I don't know, somewhere around 3. And my son killed his first turkey. And this past year, I killed 7 legally. Okay. And my daughter killed her first turkey, and my son also killed his turkey. So I killed those in Louisiana, Kentucky, and Nebraska.
Now, you heard him say 100 miles, and now, just so I can paint the picture for you. Now, he ain't no super chunk. Okay, he ain't sitting over here looking like he just got off the couch. Probably one of the more fit guys in our area. We've been Facebook friends for a little while, and he and his family went to the beach, and I was like, oh my God, this guy could be a fitness model. I mean, he is chiseled up. You do CrossFit?
I do.
Yeah, I mean, guys, you like it, huh?
Uh-huh.
Does it help you? Do you think your fitness helps you?
Absolutely. No doubt. I mean, it helps your mental toughness, your fitness, getting in, getting out, dragging deer, you know, and a lot of it's mental. You know, whenever you get a hard workout and you push yourself through it, sitting in the stand all day long, you know, those things go hand in hand to me. Setting your stands, you know, scouting. So, stuff like that, it definitely helps
for sure. I don't do as, I mean, I'm not nowhere near, you know, what you do with your fitness, but I like to get out and I like to ruck, because when I go in the woods, you know, I'm not going to drag anything out of that woods I'm not going to eat. So I'll take my deer and I'll clean them right where they laid.
Yeah.
I'll even take the meat off the bone, put it in my bag, and I'm coming out. But I see some guys that are, they'll sit here and, good Lord, they'll have, you know, they'll try to drag the whole deer for 2 miles.
Put it on their back.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, Cam Haynes, chill out, man. It's
Cam
okay.
Haynes, he's going to throw it on his back.
Yeah, yeah. Who was that the other day I saw had one on their back?
It was probably Cameron Haynes.
I don't remember who it was, and I'm like, man, look, why don't you just quarter him up right here? Put him in your bag. It's not, you got a backpack. I don't, you know, it's just easy for me. And then when I get to the house, I take it out of that bag, I'll throw it in the sink, I'll wash it off. And then I'm going to take it to the processor, you know.
Yep.
Hey, I tell you, man, I'm talking about the processor. We're blessed in our area.
We got lots.
We got good ones.
We got some good ones.
Yeah. I mean, I use Rocky Branch sometimes, and then I'll go to Dean over in Union Parish sometimes. Yep. And, you know, I try to give Scott Taylor some work, and I try to give as much work to other guys because everybody's got their specialty. Now, you and I were talking earlier. You don't see a lot of that in the Midwest, huh?
No, it's mostly packing houses for cattle, and they do both.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like similar to Dean's, he does cows and deer and hogs and everything else. But that's mostly what it is up there.
Yeah, we got some good spots around here, man. I have yet to find somebody that just really does a poor, poor job that I would put on blast. I'm not going to put anybody on blast.
I know,
we
ain't going to put nobody on blast. But it's hard to beat that Rocky Branch sausage, man.
That Rocky Branch sausage is hard. Before. You know, Yakubovsky, that's what I call him. Anthony, I grew up around Anthony for a long time. They make a good sausage. Dean makes a good sausage. But it's just, you know, it's all what fits your flavor.
I like Dean's pan sausage.
Yeah.
Yeah. It depends on where I'm hunting and where I go. Like you said, you can't go wrong around here.
No, you really can't. I mean, and it's like, and here's the thing I was thinking the other day. Oh, we got Scooby-Doo. Scooby's over there by me. Does a fabulous job. Uncle Jesse J used to use Scooby a lot. And, man, his steaks are really good-looking stuff. So,
yeah.
But we're blessed in this area that we've got so many, and they stay busy, man.
They stay busy, dude. Man, it was – I went in Rocky Branch last year, and those poor guys, I don't know, I bet they had 30 deer to clean.
Yeah, just laid out, and you're just like, good Lord, man.
They definitely make their money.
They definitely do. They definitely do. Well, brother, man, I appreciate you coming on.
Well, man, it was a good time. I appreciate you having me for sure.
Yeah, I'm going to get you on here some more.
Absolutely.
We'll talk some more stuff because, especially getting around turkey season, I want to get you on there and we talk about turkey hunting because, hey, I don't know hardly anything about turkey hunting.
Yeah, and I'm still new at it too, so I've had some beginner's luck, but I know some turkey killers we can probably get on here.
That sounds good, man. I'm always down for talking to somebody that knows what they're doing so I can learn a little something. If nothing else, just have some good conversation.
I need to learn some more about turkeys.
Yeah.
So.
All right, Captain. Well, hey, give us one more time. Where can we find you?
Redline Outdoors, man. Just look me up on mainly YouTube's my main hub, but I do have a Facebook and an Instagram, and I just started a TikTok not too long ago.
Oh, you're gonna be TikTok famous.
I don't know about that. I kind of started a TikTok just as an advertisement for the YouTube channel, because there's actually a link you can click on, put on your little TikTok thing there beside your logo, that they can go straight to the YouTube channel. So
okay.
Y'all look me up on YouTube, man. Y'all follow along with me this season. I'd really appreciate it.
And it's not really just hunting. I mean, you went on vacation, caught some fish off the bank, didn't you?
Yeah,
I should say.
Off the beach.
Yeah.
And some pier fishing. Got a little bit of catfishing on there. But that's something next year that I'd like to get more into is some more fishing. So I've got that lawn care business that keeps me kind of busy in the summertime, and it kind of messes with my fishing. But hopefully next year I'll be able to.
But there's do some more. Yeah, there's you've got some really good how-to stuff. You know, he checks out products, and the one thing I've noticed, you're not going to plug a product you don't use.
Right.
And yeah. So if he believes in it, it's going to be on his YouTube channel.
Did you see that Tasco camera?
I saw it. I hadn't watched it yet, but I saw the tag.
$29 for that little camera, and they may even be cheaper than that. But for the money, that's a dang good camera.
Man, I'm going to have to look at it.
The only drawback to that camera is it doesn't show the battery life.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's it. But I've had some since 2019. I wrote the date on them, just on a couple of them, just to see how long they would last. And I'll go back and look, but I know I have some from 19.
Man, that's not bad.
For $29. I mean, even if somebody stole it, you know, I'd still be mad, but, you know, it's not like I lost a $200 camera.
Yeah, I'm going to spend $29 on something a whole lot less than a camera.
Yeah, just go. You can just order them on Walmart's website. That's what I did.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they have them in the store, and if they do.
So before I let you go, do y'all, his intro, I love his intro. Do your intro.
What's up, everybody?
I started to do that at the beginning, but when you hear that, what's up, everybody, man, you're going to see some cool stuff. And he used to have a mustache. Man, he had to shave his mustache. This dude had a thick, old, like, Western mustache.
Oh, it'll come back. It'll come back. Oh, I'll probably grow it out for turkey season.
Hey, we're going to do some Antlers and Hicks beard pair of products.
Are you?
Yeah, I went down to the place the other day, and I asked a little lady. I said, hey, look, you got anything that smells like a pine?
A pine tree.
And she said no, and I was like, okay.
How about a cedar?
I said, well, this is what I said. I said, is it oils that y'all use? She said, yeah, it's like essential oil. So you know what I did? She said, we can make you some unscented. I said, what if I get some oil? Can you put it in there for me? She said, yeah. So I went to Amazon. I found me some pine needle extract. Yeah. I'm going to get it in that bit. We're going to have some beard care products.
That's going to be your cover scent.
It's going to be my cover scent, and I'm going to look good for my pictures.
That's it.
So, you know, two in one.
Two in one, man.
That's it. Who knows? We may have us a beard care line after a while.
I miss my beard, I tell you that.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you, man, wearing the full face respirator, SCBAs.
Yeah.
I know that you can't have it. And I've tried to have the full face respirator before in another job I had. Had to be clean shaven. Lasted 13 months. And the day I gave my 2-week resignation, it was growing.
Yep.
I look like a baby, man.
Well, it is what it is, man. I had one every hunting season before I got on out here, so it's been 7 years since I got on at the fire department, so can't have them no more.
I'm telling you, it used to be, you know, people couldn't guess my age if I had a ball cap on. Well, now they can guess my age. I got a lot of salt in this beard, man. That dude's starting to turn white. I told my girls, I said, it's because of y'all. Y'all 13 and 14. That's why it's turning gray.
It's turning gray.
That's right.
They getting that teen behind that age, you know.
Yeah, we out there at West Wachita High School. If there's anybody listening to West Wachita High School, talk to me at a football game. I don't know anybody out there.
Say something.
Introduce yourself. We'll sit down. We'll watch football, and we'll talk deer hunting. How about that? All right, brother. Well, I'm going to let you go. Hey, I appreciate you stopping by.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
All right. All right. Well, I hope you've enjoyed the podcast. I'm going to be giving you guys some takeaway points at the end of the podcast to something that you can take away and apply in your own life, something that the guests were doing good in their life that you could say, hey, maybe I can do these in mine. So here are the 3 points we're going to use from Adams. Number one, Adam has success in his life because he isn't afraid of failure. If you've never failed at anything, then you've never tried anything. Nobody has ever become interesting or successful by not failing. Embrace your failures, learn from them, and move on. Adam has done plenty of things in his life. He failed a lot of times, but you know what? He bounces back, and he comes back stronger each and every time. Now, number two, you heard us talk about haters. Haters are going to be basically anybody in your life who's jealous of what you're doing with your life, and then they try to bring you down or discredit what you're doing. Don't let the haters hold you back from doing something you enjoy or something that you want to do. People who are envious of what other people are doing in their life are the one who feels like failures in their own life, okay? Now, to those who think that, who realize finally, hey, you know what, maybe I am a little bit of a hater, don't be envious of others. I'm going to tell you what Tom Lowe of Christchurch recently said. This is what he said. Envy rots the bones and blunts the ability of us to see what we actually have and who we really are. Enjoy what you have and work on not being envious when other people are prospering. When somebody else is prospering, prop them up, give them up, give them praise, tell them how good they're doing. Don't bring them down, man. And lastly, you heard Adam say that there's a trade-off with everything. This past year, he has learned the trade-off for hunting a lot is a lot less time with your family. I doubt that happens again this year. Ecclesiastes 4 talks about laziness as well as being a workaholic. So both of them are, you know, both of them can be bad in and of themselves. In a nutshell, what Ecclesiastes 4 is saying is work hard but with moderation. Take time to enjoy the gifts that God has given you. Take time with your family. Take time with your friends. And make sure you're spending your time wisely. That's all for the podcast, guys. My name is Greg Hicks. This is the Antlers and Hicks podcast. And I want to encourage you guys to live life past 20 yards. See you next time.